As the trial of Chad and Lori Daybell nears closer, specifically Lori in the coming weeks, we're trying to give you as much context on the case as possible. So we're going back into the archives all the way to 2020, August 3rd and 4th, for the preliminary hearing of Chad Daybell, parts 1 through 13, so you can hear where it all begins in the courtroom and where it will pick up as the trial of Lori Daybell begins very soon. This is that hearing. Let's go to the courtroom.
Mr. Wooden, I've unfortunately been talking all weekend, obviously, about this in preparation for this, and there is one issue that we can briefly take up that's not a significant consequence, but will hopefully and effectively advance the speed of this preliminary hearing.
I would like to take the issue up in chambers so there's no issues with recordings and everything else. We'll take a brief recess back in chambers. We'll reconvene here in just a moment.
All right. Thank you. Please be seated.
We're going to go back on the record in CR 2220-755, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. The court took a brief recess so I could have a sidebar with counsel from the defense and the state. We'll proceed forward. Mr. Wood, does the state wish to make an opening argument here today?
No, Your Honor. The state will just proceed.
Mr. Pryor, does the defense wish to make any opening arguments?
Not at this time, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Mr. Wood, you may call your first witness.
Thank you. The state calls Ray Hermosillo.
Mr. Hermosillo, if you'll please come forward, stand here in front of the witness stand, raise your right arm and face the clerk.
Do you solemnly swear affirm the testimony you're about to give in this cause, not only shall be the truth, but what you have to tell
us? Mr. Hermosillo, you can be seated here at the witness stand. Once you enter that witness stand, because it is surrounded by plexiglass, I'll allow you to remove your mask. If you'll get fairly close to that microphone so that we can make a record of you. Mr. Hermosillo, we are making a court record as well, so if you'll make sure to listen to the full question before you begin answering, it will ensure that no two people are talking over each other on the record. Mr. Hermosillo, if you'll give your full name as well as your occupation, we'll get started.
Ray Dennis Hermosillo. I'm a detective with the Rexburg Police Department.
Thank you. Mr. Wood, you may inquire when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Before I do ask Mr. or Detective Hermosillo any questions, I have several self-authenticating documents and documents that should come into the court under Rule 201, and I will provide those to the court. State's Exhibit 1. I'm assuming I hand this to the bailiff.
Mr. Pryor, have you seen a copy of State's Exhibit 1?
I have gotten all of the exhibits at this point, but in terms of the numeric order that they're put in, I have seen that, Judge, and there's no objection to that.
All right. Exhibit 1 will be admitted. Mr. Wood, would you like that to be handed to the witness?
Yes.
Thank you.
And then, Your Honor, I have several more states. Exhibit 2.
Okay. Exhibit 2 will be handed to the bailiff. Ms. Bailiff, if you'll please show that to Mr. Pryor. Mr. Pryor, any objection to the self-authentication of Exhibit 2 being admitted?
No objection, Your Honor.
Exhibit 2 will be admitted.
State's Exhibit 3.
Ms. Bailiff, if you'll do the same with Exhibit 3. Mr. Pryor, any objection to Exhibit 3?
No objection, Your Honor.
Exhibit 3 will be admitted.
States Exhibit 4.
Any objection to Exhibit 4, Mr. Pryor?
No objection, Judge.
Exhibit 4 will be admitted.
States Exhibit 5.
No objection, Judge.
Exhibit 5 will be admitted.
Your Honor, States Exhibit 1 through 5 are all self-authenticating documents. I have two documents I will ask the court to take judicial notice of. The first is an order on a petition under the Child Protective Act in Madison County case CV 33-20-45. In the interest of Tylee Ashlyn Ryland and Joshua Jackson Vallow, this order was signed by yourself in that case.
Mr. Pryor, any objection to the court taking judicial notice of that document?
Judge, if I could have just one moment, may I please?
No problem. Mr. Wood, you're not asking for that document to be marked?
We will ask for it to be marked and entered as an exhibit as well.
Okay, Exhibit 6. Is that correct?
Yes.
No objection.
Exhibit 6 will be admitted.
And then
would you like me to just take that into the clerk's possession at this point, Mr. Wood?
Yes, that would be fine.
The court will do so.
And one more document the state would ask the court to take judicial notice of, and that we'd ask and be entered as State's Exhibit 7, an order in that same child protection case deeming that Lori Vallow was served on January 25th and that any errors in that service were cured.
Okay. Mr. Pryor, any objection to Exhibit 7?
No objection, Judge.
Exhibit 7 will be admitted. The court will take judicial notice of said exhibit. Mr. Wood, any other?
No, if I may inquire of the witness now.
You may inquire when you're ready.
Thank you. Mr. Hermosillo, will you state your name and spell it for the court?
Ray Dennis Hermosillo. RayDennisHermosillo.
Thank you. What is your current occupation?
I'm a detective with the Rexburg City Police Department.
How long have you been a detective?
Over a year.
Okay. How long have you been with the Rexburg Police Department?
19 years.
Are you post-certified?
I am.
Okay. Detective, have you ever had the opportunity to meet the defendant, Chad Daybell?
Yes.
Is he here in the court today?
He is.
Can you point him out and describe what he's wearing?
Sitting at a defense table, white shirt, blue tie.
Thank you. Detective, how did you become involved in the investigation regarding J.J. Vallo and Tylee Ryan?
In early November, I was contacted by Gilbert Police Department. I was asked to seize a Jeep that was in Lori Vallo's possession. Along with that, I was asked to perform intermittent surveillance.
All right. And did you do that for the Gilbert Police Department?
I did.
Okay. Did they ever ask you to do anything else?
Yes.
What was that?
I was asked to do a welfare check on November 25th.
Okay.
2019.
Of 2019?
Yes, sir.
Who were you asked to do a welfare check on?
A 7-year-old boy by the name of Joshua Jackson Vallo, who also went by JJ.
Okay, and is it all right with you if I just refer to that child as JJ from here on out?
Yes.
Okay. Detective, have you ever met JJ Vallo?
No.
Have you ever met Tylee Ryan?
No.
Okay. Through your investigation, have you learned what JJ Vallo and Tylee Ryan looked like?
I have.
Okay. How have you done that?
I've seen hundreds of videos and photographs of Tylee and JJ both.
Okay. Detective, I'm going to ask you to look at State's Exhibit 1.
Before we get any further into this, let me just remind the media that pursuant to Idaho Court Administrative Rule 32, the court is prohibiting the photography or the filming of any exhibits until further order of the court. That would include, but not be limited to, any documents that are exhibits, any pictures that are exhibits, and any film that are exhibits that are going to be played potentially today. I will allow the cameras to remain running so that the audio can be recorded, but any photography or filming of any of those exhibits is prohibited. Also, any filming or recording of any of the table of the defense, any notes or anything else is prohibited, as well as the state. So with that, Mr. Wood, you may proceed.
Thank you. Detective, do you have State's Exhibit 1?
I do.
What is that document?
This is a birth certificate for Kane and Trahan.
For who?
Kane and Trahan.
Okay. And what is Kane and Trahan's birth date?
May 25th, 2012.
Okay. And who are Kane and Trahan's parents listed as?
Dennis Trahan and Mandy Ledger.
Okay. Thank you. Detective, can you look at State's Exhibit 2? What is that document?
An adoption decree.
Okay. Who is listed on that adoption decree? Who is the child listed on that adoption decree?
Kane and Trahan.
Kane and Trahan. Who are the adoptive parents of Kane and Trahan?
Mr. Wood, I'm having a hard time hearing. Are you saying Kamen?
Kanan.
Kanan, can you have the witness spell that name, please?
C-A-N-A-A-N.
And the last name?
T-R-A-H-A-N.
Thank you.
Thank you. Who are the adoptive parents of Kane and Trahan?
Leland Charles Anthony Vallo and Lori Noreen Cox Vallo.
Okay. And does that document contain a name change for Kane and Trahan?
It does.
What is his name changed to?
Joshua Jackson Vallo.
Okay. Detective, will you look at State's Exhibit 3? What is that document?
A birth certificate.
Who is it a birth certificate for?
Joshua Jackson Vallo.
Okay, and what is the birth date listed on that?
May 25th, 2012.
Thank you. Will you look at State's Exhibit 4? What is that document?
A birth certificate.
Who is it a birth certificate for?
Tylee Ashlyn Ryan.
What is her birth date listed?
9/24/2002.
And who are the parents listed on that?
Joseph Anthony Ryan Jr. and Lori Noreen Cox.
Okay. And Detective, will you look at State's Exhibit 5? What is that?
A marriage certificate.
Who is it a marriage certificate for?
Chad Guy Daybell and Lori Noreen Ryan Vallow.
Okay, and what is the date of marriage?
November 5th, 2019.
And where was that certificate of marriage issued?
In Hawaii, on the island of Kauai.
Okay, thank you. Detective, you testified earlier you were asked to do a welfare check, correct?
Correct.
What did you do in response to that welfare check?
On November 26th, 2019, myself and Detective Hope went to 565 Pioneer Road, which was Lori Vallow's residence. We ended up making contact with the defendant, Mr. Daybell, and Alex Cox.
I'm going to stop you there. Who was Alex Cox?
Alex Cox is Lori's brother.
Okay. So you made contact with them. What happened?
I made contact with Alex and asked Alex if Lori was home.
How did he respond?
Judge, I'm going to object here, sir.
Mr. Wood?
Your Honor, this is a statement of a co-conspirator coming in. He is an unavailable witness because he's no longer living, but it's still a statement of a co-conspirator, and I think it comes in.
Mr. Pryor, let you respond to that.
Judge, I'd like to see the court documents that list Mr. Alex Cox as a co-conspirator. I don't believe those documents are presently in existence at this point, so I have nothing that supports that other than Mr. Wood's statement.
Mr. Wood?
Your Honor, the complaint alleges Mr. Daybell, Mrs. Vallow, conspirators known and known, and the probable cause affidavit clearly lists Alex Cox as a co-conspirator.
Mr. Pryor, it appears that Mr. Wood is explaining that because it is information communicated between co-conspirators named in a criminal complaint, it falls under the rule of non-hearsay under the Idaho criminal rules. The Idaho rules of evidence. Do you wish to respond to that?
Judge, the complaint also lists known and unknown. So at this point, if we go by Mr. Wood's analysis, anybody could be listed or mentioned as a co-conspirator, and all sorts of information can come in. So at this point, I stand by my initial response, which is, at least from my reading of the pleadings and the current criminal charges that are filed, there are two people that are alleged in this thing. And at that point, that's what I believe the proper application of the rule is.
The court is going to overrule the objection. The court finds that Alex Cox is named in the criminal complaint. At this juncture, we're at a preliminary hearing stage where probable cause is the standard. Mr. Pryor, if there are other co-conspirators that are named or that are brought up here today, you may renew your objection, or you may renew your objection in a further time if you feel that the allegation has not been presented sufficiently enough to show that Mr. Cox is a co-conspirator, but I am going to allow it. Under 801, the exception that allows for co-conspirator communication to be admitted. So with that, Mr. Wood, you may continue to inquire.
Thank you. Detective, can you answer that question?
Can you ask it one more time, please?
Yes. So will you testify you made contact with Mr. Daybell and Mr. Cox? What did you ask Mr. Cox?
I asked Mr. Cox if Lori Vallow was home.
How did he respond?
He stated she was not home.
Okay. What happened after that?
I asked Alex if JJ was home. I informed Mr. Cox why I was there, is to do a welfare check on JJ. So I asked him if he was there.
How did he respond?
Initially, he didn't respond. He just looked at the defendant Daybell and didn't answer my question initially.
Okay, and then what happened?
I asked him again, and he stated that Joshua was with his grandma Kay in Louisiana.
Okay, how did you respond to that?
I told Mr. Cox that was unlikely because Kay was the one who originally called in the welfare check.
All right. What happened after that?
I asked Mr. Cox how I can get a hold of Lori and asked him for her phone number.
How did he respond?
He stated he didn't have it.
Okay. What did that make you think when he told you he didn't have his phone number?
Judge, I'm going to object.
Reason?
Judge, this witness can offer his recitation of the facts, but if we're going to start getting into the issue of whether or not he gets to present his impression in terms of what a third party had told him, I think is inappropriate.
Mr. Wood, can you repeat the question for the court?
The question was what Detective Hermosillo thought of Mr. Cox's response that he did not have Lori Vallow's phone number.
Mr. Wood, you want to respond to the objection made by Mr. Pryor?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of any rule that doesn't allow the detective to describe his thoughts on an investigation.
I'm going to overrule the objection. Mr. Hermosillo, you can give your thoughts as to what you were feeling at that time. Mr. Pryor, if that goes beyond thoughts, you're welcome to re-up your objection, and I'll re-take it up to...
Thank you, Judge. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Wood.
Can you answer the question?
I thought it was suspicious because I knew that they had been close based on my initial investigation.
Okay. What happened after that, Detective?
I asked Mr. Cox where I could find Lori so I can make contact with her, and he stated that she was in apartment 107.
Okay. Once you learned that information, what did you do?
Myself and Detective Dave Hope then went to 107 to attempt to make contact with Lori.
What happened there?
Detective Dave Hope went to knock on the front door. As he was knocking on the front door, I saw the defendant Daybell driving towards me in his black Equinox.
Okay, and what did you do?
I stopped Mr. Daybell to further speak with him.
Yeah. Did you ask him any questions?
I did.
What did you ask him?
I asked Mr. Daybell when's the last time he saw JJ, and he stated that he saw JJ in apartment 107 in October.
Okay. Now, apartment 107, do you know who... You've stated this was on 565 Pioneer Road. Do you know who apartment 107 belonged to, or who lived in that apartment?
Not at that time.
Okay. What happened after he gave you that answer?
I asked Mr. Daybell for Lori Vallow's phone number, and he stated he didn't have it.
Okay. What did you think of when he told you he didn't have her number?
I again found it suspicious because I knew that they were married 2 weeks prior to my contact with Mr. Daybell.
Okay, and again, just for clarification, what was the date we're talking about now? What was that date?
November 26th, 2019.
Okay. Did you ask Mr. Daybell any other questions?
I did. I asked Mr. Daybell how he knew Lori Vallow, and he stated that he had only met her a couple times through Alex Cox.
Okay. What happened after that?
Detective Hope had come back to where we were speaking. I again asked Mr. Daybell if he had Lori's phone number, and at that point he gave me Lori Vallow's phone number.
Okay, did you ask him why he hadn't given you that number?
I did.
And what was his response?
He stated that he felt like I was accusing him of something.
Okay. In your interaction with him, had you accused him of anything?
No.
Okay. What did you do in your investigation after that?
I broke contact with Mr. Daybell and called Lieutenant Ron Ball to respond to my location. Based on Mr. Daybell's actions, Mr. Cox's actions, what I was told about them hardly knowing each other, I felt there was something more going on with the whereabouts of JJ, so I wanted more officers over there so we could figure out what was going on.
Okay. And then what happened after that?
Lieutenant Ron Ball, Detective Dave Stubbs, and Officer Kellen Wett responded over to 565 Pioneer.
Okay. And then what happened?
Myself and Lieutenant Ron Ball attempted to make contact with Lori in apartment 175 and were unable to make contact with anybody in apartment 175.
Okay. What did you do after that?
We went to apartment 174, which was Melanie Boudreau's apartment.
Okay, I'm going to stop right there. Who is Melanie Boudreau?
It's Lori's niece.
Okay. And then what happened?
We were unable to make contact with anybody there as well.
Okay. So what did you do after that?
I was instructed by Lieutenant Ron Ball to go to the prosecutor's office and obtain a search warrant.
Is that what you did?
I went to the prosecutor's office, yes.
Did you obtain a search warrant that day?
No, I did not.
Okay. Did you have any contact with Lori Ballow that day?
I did not have any contact with Lori, no.
Okay. Were you still with Detective Hope?
I was.
Do you know if he had contact with Lori Ballow that day?
He did.
Okay. Do you know...
Judge, could I have some foundation as to...
I can lay that.
All right.
You were with Detective Hope that day?
Yes.
Do you know if he ever attempted to call Lori Ballow with the number you were given?
He did. He attempted to call Lori Ballow on the way to the prosecutor's office.
Okay. And did he ever get in touch with her? Did she ever answer the phone when he called?
No, he was able to leave a message on her voicemail.
Okay, and were you with him when he did that?
I was not with him when he did that.
Judge, I'm going to move to strike.
Okay, reason?
Well, Judge, he has no basis other than what he was told, obviously, if he wasn't present during that conversation. I'm not sure how he can admit that conversation since he wasn't present for that, and the only way he would know that is if either Lieutenant Ball or someone else told him that that took place. It's hearsay at this point, and it's not admissible.
Your Honor, we'll just move on. It's fine.
All right. That would be stricken.
I would ask that it be stricken from the record, though.
That conversation will be stricken from the record. Just so I'm clear, Mr. Pryor, the conversation between Mr. Ball and...
Your Honor, I believe it was Detective Hope that Detective Stubbs listed.
I apologize. I said Lieutenant Ball. Lieutenant Ball?
Detective Hope.
Detective Ball. I apologize. I meant Officer Hope. I apologize, Judge.
That conversation will be stricken.
Detective, during your investigation that day, were you able to locate J.J. Ballow?
No.
Okay. Did you... have you spoken with Detective Ball and Detective Stubbs about their investigation that day?
I have.
Do you know if parts of their investigation were on body cam?
It was.
Judge, I'm going to object again, foundation.
Mr. Wood... Mr. Pryor, the question was if Officer Hermosillo knew if it was on body cam. So I'm going to overrule that objection. That's just a question for Mr. Hermosillo. Obviously, what's in the body cam is probably a different story. You may proceed.
Thank you.
Mr. Hermosillo, you may answer that question.
It was on body cam.
Okay. Have you had an opportunity to watch that body cam?
Yes.
Okay. I asked you earlier if you were able
to... Judge, could we approach, please?
You may. Would you like to do that back in chambers?
No, no.
I'll instruct the media to make sure that recording is not taking place here.
You've been listening to the preliminary hearing of Chad Daybell, parts 1 through 13. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any piece of this compelling court testimony as we prepare for the trial of Lori Daybell in the coming weeks. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.